prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
The truth will set you free. Happy Easter morning.
Happy Easter.
I am Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
And Jesus has risen. And today we're going to prove it.
We are.
We're going to talk about that today. We're going to prove that he has risen from the dead.
Oh, we've never done that before.
We're also going to answer a Bible contradiction about whether or not women were at Jesus' empty tomb before or after the sunrise.
Right.
The Bible contradicts itself on this, or supposedly.
Again.
So we'll see what it says. Yeah. But hey, thanks for tuning in today. We got some really, really good stuff. How was Jesus the Messiah? How do we know? How do we know he rose from the dead? We're going to try to hit all this today. We're going to go fast.
So basically, this is our Easter program.
That's right. This is our Easter program. And we want to invite you out to Revolution Church Easter morning.
That's right.
Most likely, if you're hearing this on air, you've already missed our 9 o'clock service, but...
Right. Hey, 11:15 is coming right up.
That's right, 11:15. So while you listen to the show, just go ahead, slip some pants on, put on a shirt. We don't care what it looks like. We just want to invite you to Revolution for Easter Sunday. You've been thinking about going to church. I mean, you've been thinking about it. You might as well make today the day.
Right, because studies show that Easter is probably the most popular Christian holiday.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go to church, this would be the day to do it.
So come on out. You'll get a free drink at the coffee bar. Mm-hmm. We got some rock music. I mean, you guys know what Revolution's like. You listen to the radio show. Right. It's kind of like that, just in church form.
It's a little crazy.
So, I wouldn't say crazy. No, I mean, no one's like dancing in the aisles or anything like that.
Oh, it's not that kind of crazy. It's just, it's good crazy.
It's just like loud music and then preaching where I make fun of Dave. That's the main content of the sermons.
You don't do as much as you used to do, but hey, I'm not complaining.
All right. Anyway, so was Jesus the Messiah? How do we know? And the first thing is, I want to look at some prophecies.
Okay.
We're not going to look at them all. I mean, there are a massive amount of prophecies that predict who Jesus was and who the Messiah was going to be.
Right. And he fulfilled every one of them.
Well, exactly. He fulfilled every one of them, with the exception of a couple, which he's going to fulfill when he returns the second time. But Daniel 9, I just want to start there. This is one of my favorite. Daniel 9 gives the exact year that Jesus was going to die. The Messiah was going to die.
So the Bible, Daniel says that Jesus would die in 33 AD. Did it give the year?
Well, it doesn't say it quite like that. No. But I don't want to go into all of that, but... I do want to point out, look, you can go to our website, you can find out, we cover this in other shows, but the book of Daniel was written hundreds of years before Jesus was on earth. And so when it says in chapter 9, you know, hey, it's going to be this many years until the Messiah is cut off and killed, that's how many years it's going to be. And it gives, I mean, when you do the math, it gives the exact year that Jesus came and died. I mean, it's really, it's pretty phenomenal.
Amazing. Yeah.
And so it's not, I mean, some people say, well, couldn't you fulfill that on your own? I don't know. It's pretty hard to
you would have
get the government to execute you on the right day.
And
right.
Honestly, you would probably have to do something probably crazier than what he did to get it to happen exactly right at the right time.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, man. I mean, exactly. And so, you know, depending on who you who is talking, people will say the book of Daniel was written at least, you know, a couple hundred years before Jesus. And so, you know, we're going a couple hundred years was predicted the exact year Jesus hit this. Then also you get in the book of Genesis, the ancestry of the Messiah. It predicts that the Messiah is going to be from Abraham.
Right.
That's Genesis 12:1-3. It predicts that the Messiah will come from the tribe of Judah. That would be similar to, you know, the state of Kansas.
Right.
It was, you know, that's Genesis 49. Then it says in 2 Samuel 7 that the Messiah is going to come from the house of David.
I see a pattern going on here.
Yeah, that would be a particular... I mean, the house of David was a king, and so that would be a particular king's line, or
a lineage from the tribe of Judah. Within the tribe of Judah.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of like the tribe of Judah is like the state of Kansas, and then from the house of David would kind of be like saying from the house of Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Okay.
Yep. I mean, that's like a specific president or specific king.
Right.
And then it says in Micah 5:2 that the Messiah was going to come from Bethlehem. It's basically giving you an address. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, I just want you guys to think, like, way back to your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. That would be Abraham in predicting Genesis 12, okay? And then go all the way down and pick one state of the country that you were born in, just like it predicted right. from the tribe of Judah. And then pick, you know, one person who was like, you know, the most like a king in your mm-hmm. family who moved to that state a long time ago. And then go all the way down to you and figure out what town you were born in. How many people fit that exact description?
That would narrow it down to just a couple if you have siblings.
For you, it would be like you and...
my brother and my four sisters.
Okay, so just five people. Mm-hmm. For me, it would narrow it down to two people.
Right.
Actually, maybe just one. I don't know if my brother was actually born in the same city as me or not. It might have been a different hospital. But nonetheless, you're getting the point here. Right. This is not like, well, there's 100,000 people it could be. No, there's like five people. It would be Jesus and his brothers would be the only ones who fit this particular description.
Yeah, and these are what? Five prophecies?
Oh, yeah.
Here? And then there are tons of others.
Well, there's over 100 prophecies.
Yeah, that his siblings did not fulfill.
Right. Well, not only that, I guess you could say his siblings did not fulfill the born in Bethlehem one because they were traveling and were in Bethlehem when Jesus was born.
Right.
It also says that the Messiah will be called out of Egypt. And they just happened to move to Egypt later after Jesus was born. I mean, these are not things that Jesus could control. And so, guess what? A guy shows up the exact year the Bible predicted to meet his death. Mm-hmm. He's doing miracles. Historians record it. Not just the Bible, but other historians. Then he's from the right line of Abraham. He's from the right tribe. He's from the right house of David. He's born in the right city. He also lived in the right country. It's all at the exact right time, predicted hundreds of years
before. Come on, man.
And none of this stuff did he actually have control over.
You're just piling on now.
This is crazy.
This isn't fair for atheists.
No, it's not fair because you can't do this on accident.
Right.
I mean, we've done a show on the statistics. You just go to our website, truthrevolution.tv, and type in statistics and Jesus, or go to YouTube and type in revolution statistics and Jesus. You're going to see a video we made. I mean, it's more likely that somebody would get hit by lightning, hit by a meteor, win two lotteries, have quadruplets, like all on the same day. Yeah. I mean, it's
astronomical.
It's impossible. It is the statistical definition of impossible.
Right.
You cannot fulfill these prophecies. And we're only measuring like 40 prophecies, and there's over 100.
Yeah. Doesn't that also include winning the lottery in this state and then winning the lottery in another state on the same day?
Yeah, it does. So something like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole point is you can't do this on accident.
Right.
It can only be done by the hand of God. I mean, especially that this was predicted hundreds of years in advance. Mm-hmm. There's no other explanation other than this was divine, not human.
Right, but what would you say to those people that say, well, those are probably written after the fact. They just say that it was before the fact.
Well, with the exception of a few prophecies, no historian really accepts that conclusion,
right.
Even secular ones. They all agree that these things were written before Jesus was born.
Okay.
There's a couple of crazies out there who do, and I shouldn't say crazies, but there's a couple of people out there who say, well, the book of Daniel was written after Jesus. But there's the only, let me be clear on this. They don't do that because they use archaeological dating methods to come up with a different date. If they use the proper archaeological or historic dating methods, they come up that this book was written hundreds of years before Jesus.
Right.
But what they look at it and say is, well, there's no way that this book predicted this stuff with such accuracy. It must have been written after Jesus.
Right, because it's too accurate.
Right, because it doesn't just predict about Jesus. It predicts other things as well about the nation of Israel and the fall and things like that. So that's why they say, well, this couldn't have been. It's too accurate. Well,
if that's the only reason, well, then come on.
Yeah, I mean, all the methods we have of determining when it was written show us it was written hundreds of years before Jesus. But they're not the only ones that reject Jesus. I mean, John chapter 11, 47, 48, it says this, then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. Now, listen to what they say.
What are we accomplishing, they asked. Here is a man performing many miraculous signs. If we let him go like this, everyone will believe in him.
That cracks me up! Seriously. hey, this guy, he was born in Bethlehem, just like predicted. He's right. Comes from the house of David, from the tribe of Judah, from Abraham. Right. I mean, he's pretty much exactly what the prediction said.
And the he people that were against him said,
born, hey, he's born in the right town.
He's doing all the right things.
He's doing all these miracles in addition to all of that. And look, it's about the exact same year we're supposed to kill the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
We better stop him. Otherwise, people will believe in him.
Right.
People, I mean,
I think they were really afraid of having the power taken out of their hands.
Oh, yeah. You know, so. I mean, they saw this. They should have known. But instead of going, wow, he fits everything, mm-hmm. they just go, nope, don't want to do that.
Right.
Don't want him to be it.
And in so doing, they fulfilled prophecy. Way to go.
Thanks, guys. You know, from Norman Geisler, he writes, and he gives a huge list in one of his books of how the death was predicted, about how the resurrection was predicted. Mm-hmm. There's tons of prophecies. He says the Old Testament predicted that the Messiah would die. Psalm 22, Isaiah 53, Daniel 9, Zechariah 12. Jesus fulfilled this and nearly 100 other Old Testament prophecies about the Messiah. For example, Matthew 4, John 4, he gives when he's fulfilling those. He says Jesus predicted many times during his ministry that he was going to die and rise again. So Jesus predicted it as well.
Mm-hmm.
In Matthew 12, Mark 8, John 2, and John 10. One of the more explicit is Matthew 17. The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life.
It doesn't get any more clear than that, actually. This is the guy that predicted his own death before he died.
Predicted his own resurrection.
Yeah, his own resurrection.
And then he did it. I mean,
I could predict when I'm going to die. I mean, if
you committed suicide?
Yeah, if I decided I was going to end my own life, somehow that's easy to predict.
Yeah.
You cannot predict, I'm coming back to life, baby.
Well, yeah, you can't predict that. Not only can you not predict that, you cannot predict when someone else is going to kill you.
Right, that's true.
He says, I'm going to be betrayed in the hands of sinners and they will kill me. I don't care. You can't predict exactly that. You don't know that. So,
right.
But anyway, the Bible had predicted 100 years before Jesus even said it. But some people will say, okay, well, how do you know this is true? You know, what other sources talk about Jesus besides the Bible?
Right.
Do we have any secular confirmation for the biblical claims? Mm-hmm. Are there any ancient historians that wrote about incidents in the Bible? And the answer is?
We do,
absolutely. And we're going to hopefully go through some of those briefly today. But first, I want to make it clear. The Bible needs no other sources to back up its claims.
Why do you say that?
Well, it can stand on its own merit, not because of its sacred nature, because, oh, it's the Bible.
Right.
But because of the facts surrounding the Bible. Okay. First, anyone looking for historical confirmation of the acts or life of Jesus or most any other biblical character must understand that the Bible is the primary source of historical information. For example, the four New Testament Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they contain more information about the life of Jesus Christ than any other text available. And this should not be surprising, since one of the Bible's main concerns is the salvation of man that Jesus brought.
Amen.
I mean, other texts don't have the same purpose, and hence, they will not contain the same amount of information about Jesus. They're not going to, period. The Bible records the amazing history of Israel more closely than any other ancient text. And this, too, is not surprising, since these people were God's chosen nation, and much of the Old Testament is, quote, the record of the nation.
Right.
Like, we wouldn't expect to find the bulk of historical records about the United States in New Zealand, would we?
Well, no.
No! I mean, we'll find some references to the United States in New Zealand's mm-hmm. historical records, but New Zealand's historical records are concerned with New Zealand.
Exactly.
And so when someone says, well, are there other historical records confirming what happened in Israel? Well, there is, but you're kind of barking up the wrong tree.
Right.
I mean, well, I don't know if the United States is real. I'm going to go to Zimbabwe and I'm going to search their historical records for proof that the United States is real.
Right. Well, here's the thing is that archaeology for a long time wondered whether certain things in the Bible were actually true or actually did happen. They like King David.
Yeah.
At one point they were like, well, we don't know whether it was King David or not. But you know, in the middle of last century, well, they stumbled upon King David in archaeology.
Well, they consistently confirm what the Bible claims about history. Consistently.
Yes.
Those who reject the biblical Jesus on the basis that the Bible alone contains certain aspects, they're just off base. I mean, the texts included in the Bible were written because that's what the Bible's concerned about.
Right.
Roman historians aren't concerned about that. However, we do have information from Roman historians and other historians.
And they corroborate, by the way.
Yeah, we just want to make it clear. The Bible's the main source. It's always going to be the main source. Anyway, We're going to hit some of these secular guys on the other end of this. We're also going to go through and prove that Jesus really did rise from the dead.
Amen.
So you don't want to miss that. We just looked at some prophecies and a little historical information at this half. We're also going to do a Bible contradiction. So we got a busy second half of the show.
Yep. You want to hang in there.
And get your pants on. Come out to Revolution Church starting at 11:15 this Easter morning. Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. We've been growing and now we're going to two services.
Sunday morning at 9 a.m. or 11:15 a.m. Check us out at salinarevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Well, most people here hadn't been for a long, long time, if ever, so don't worry, you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11:15 a.m.
salinarevolution.com or check us out on Facebook.
Revolution! Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com, that's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com, K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
What would compel you to believe in God?
Good question, but that question doesn't always work.
Someone might say, if God came down here face to face and told me he existed, I'd believe.
Well, that's great, but what if God's real and he doesn't do that kind of thing?
I don't believe in deer, but if one wants to come out and have coffee with me at Starbucks, I'll happily change my viewpoint.
Yeah, you see, that don't work. If we're looking for deer, we have to look for them on their terms, in a forest, near food source, quietly.
And we have to look for God on his terms.
Yep.
If the Christian God is real, how would he show up?
Well, he'd communicate his message through an ancient book, prophecies, and a guy named Jesus who lived 2,000 years ago.
So to decipher if that is legit or not, we have to ask if the prophecies are true, if Jesus really died and rose from the dead, and so on.
We must search the evidence in a way that actually makes sense in the way the evidence is given.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same. To be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back.
Yes.
We're talking about the resurrection of Christ today, and did it really actually happen? Because we have doubts, right?
We have reasons not to doubt. We have historical information that Jesus rose from the dead.
Right.
We've been looking at how we confirm the Bible's true. We're going to go over a couple of historians here, and then we're going to talk about how Jesus rose from the dead and what the evidence is.
You know, we were talking earlier about how the Bible stands on itself.
Yeah.
And it needs no other sources in order to be correct, because it is what it is. But that being said, the fact that we do have other sources just totally builds on top of that. It's just crazy. It takes something that is like true and makes it uber true. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it confirms what the Bible says. And so we can have confidence that what the Bible is saying is actually accurate.
Amen.
And not just being made up. We haven't found anything. And let me be clear about this. We have not found anything from history or archaeology that contradicts what the Bible says.
Right.
Every once in a while, someone will say, but you haven't found this archaeologically, and the Bible says this happened. That doesn't mean it contradicts what it means is nobody's found that
right.
yet. So we just have to be really careful on that. Everything we found archaeologically confirms what the Bible has claimed so far, which is interesting. And plus, we looked at the prophecies that came hundreds of years before Jesus. He fulfilled a lot of them. Just a couple of the, by the way, you got to get out to Revolution Church, 1115. This is right. Easter.
Yes.
I mean, you've been thinking about going to church. This is the right day to come on out. So it's going to be laid back. Don't worry. I'm just going to be glad you're there. So just come on out to church. Check it out one time. So, all right. So some historians, you got Tacitus, who was a first century historian. Mm-hmm. He wrote a lot of stuff about Christ in his writings. Okay. This guy was not a Christian.
Yeah. That's one thing that we need to basically make known. He's not a Christian. He's got nothing to gain by saying these things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he refers to the resurrection as a superstition. Mm-hmm. he says, quote, that the writings contains references to Christians named after Christus who suffered the extreme penalty under Pontius Pilate during the reign of Tiberius.
And what is the extreme penalty?
Well, that's the crucifixion. That's death.
I mean, that is totally extreme.
Yeah, and the superstition he's talking about that had made its way to Rome was the resurrection.
Right.
So, I mean, this guy here, he's showing very, very early on. I mean, he lived around the year 55 is when he was born. And so this is really soon after Jesus. Right. And he's already showing that people consider Jesus to have risen from the dead. Historically. And then you got Suetonius. He was a Roman historian. He mentions Christ. He mentions Christians. He was the chief secretary for Emperor Hadrian. So he had access to the imperial records. He is not a Christian. In one of his entrances about Claudius, Suetonius says this, because the Jews at Rome caused continuous disturbances at the instigation of Christ, he expelled them from the city, talking about the emperor.
Right.
Well, of course, this corresponds to Acts 18:2, which says exactly that there were Jews who were expelled from the city,
right?
Showing historical confirmation. You get a guy named Thallus, who's a historian, who wrote very, very close to the time of the death and resurrection of Jesus, sometime around the AD 52 or 52 CE, however you want to put it. And one writer has said, none of his works are extant, though a few fragmented citations are preserved by other writers. One such writer is Julius Africanus in 221, who quotes Thallus, okay, this is the quote, in a discussion of the darkness which followed the crucifixion of Christ.
Aha.
Interesting. You know, the Bible, it talks about in Matthew 27, about how when Jesus was being crucified, a darkness came over the land.
Right.
And it was like this weird, abnormal, eerie darkness. And here you have secular confirmation from a historian that this actually did happen.
Right. A non-Christian historian, by the way.
Right. Exactly. You get Pliny the Younger, a government official, Roman author and administrator. His writings and judgments, we see that Jesus was actually worshipped as a god by early believers. This wasn't something that grew over 1,000 years.
Right.
He was worshipped as God right away.
Yeah, we've been talking about that quite a bit lately, mm-hmm. On whether Jesus actually claimed to be God. Did he accept worship from his followers? And he certainly did.
Exactly. So so you got secular confirmation like that. There's much more, but that's all we're going to do today, because we're going to hit a Bible contradiction.
Okay.
Bible contradiction.
All right, the Bible contradiction today brought to you by the fine folks over at evilbible.com.
Ooh.
Is that saying that they have an evil Bible, or are they calling our Bible evil? I have no idea.
they have an evil Bible that tries to kill them when they're sleeping at night?
Right. All right, check it out. When Jesus rose from the dead, when did the women find the tomb? Was it after sunrise or before? Mark 16 says very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb.
Okay.
However, John 20, early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance.
So
entrance.
Entrance, yeah. Okay, so the question is, Mark says they went after sunrise.
Right.
John says they went while it was dark.
Right.
Which one was it?
It's not going to be dark after sunrise, is it?
No. Well, of course, in our cracked acronym, which we've been going around doing seminars about, done them in Miami and LA and here in Salina. We give the letter second letter C stands for credibility.
Right.
You have to give some credit when you're reading something that this person knows a little bit of what they've researched or they're talking about. And so you always want to say, is there any possible way that this actually makes sense in real life without me just labeling it a contradiction? And this doesn't go just for when you're reading a Bible. I mean, this goes for when you're reading a book by Richard Dawkins, The Atheist.
Right, yeah.
I mean, is there anything when you read it and you go, that doesn't seem true? Well, just give a little credit and think, is there any way that could be true? And we look at this Is there any way that it's still dark just after sunrise? Absolutely. I mean, I put my kids to bed every single night, right now, it's still a little light outside because the sun is just setting. Yes. Okay. I can say, look, the sun has set. And they say, but it's still light outside. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's kind of the converse of that. I mean, the sun has risen, but there
still not quite light out.
Some people might still describe it as kind of dark out.
Yeah.
And so John, who says it was really early in the morning and it was still dark,
and especially in a mountainous area like
in a mountainous area, it doesn't mean that the sun hadn't risen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just give a little credit. Plus, you have to use the D for dialect. Which means, what type of language are they using? Are they using scientific descriptions? Or are they using colloquial language? And
totally, all the way, scientific descriptions all throughout the Bible.
And when they talk about the sunrise or whether or not it's dark, they're not saying, well, he said it was dark, therefore it was 100% dark and there was it was absolute no light there at all.
Can't see my hand in front of my face.
I mean, he's just saying, you know, it's dark out. It's dark out. I'm not talking about the position of the sun. The other person says, well, yeah, the sun had risen. I mean, it could have been peaking. I mean, it could have been up in the sky, but they're not giving you a scientific description. They're just giving you a general frame of reference.
Right.
So my guess is that these ladies went while the sun had begun to rise, but it was still not very bright. It was still dark out there if very early in the morning.
Right.
So, which I'm sure we've all been awake at that point sometime in our lives.
And interesting that John only mentions Mary Magdalene, while Mark mentions a number of ladies.
Oh, yeah. And that's another contradiction we could look at. We'll help evilbible.com out here. But wherever there's one woman, wherever there's, you know, three or four ladies, there's always one. Mark says that Mary Magdalene and some other ladies are there. John just mentions Mary Magdalene. Mm-hmm. Well, he was just focusing on her. It doesn't mean the other ladies weren't there. So that's the answer for our contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
Thank you, Evil Bible. We shall use you again in the future.
All right. So now the question is, did Jesus rise from the dead? All right. We looked at it. He fulfilled the prophecy of the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. We've looked at some secular confirmation to confirm that, yeah, the Bible is probably telling us the truth. It's not way out there. It's not inaccurate. It's always been proven to be right.
Right.
And Christians worship Jesus as God, believe he had risen from the dead right away.
Right. Well, you know, people had to have seen him. If you're not going to say, well, I heard about this, but did it really happen?
Right.
You had to have seen him.
Well, and we're going to go through this. There's an acronym called FEAT, F-E-A-T, the greatest feat in history. It's by a guy named Hank Anagraff. He wrote a book called The Resurrection. You got to go get it. And this FEAT acronym starts with F, and the F stands for...
Fatal torment. Yeah.
Jesus died. Okay, you look at the wounds. He was crucified. He was beaten. He suffered hematidrosis, which is a condition when you're under so much anxiety, you literally sweat blood.
Right.
It makes your skin dry. It makes your skin susceptible to being cut and bruised. They put crowns of thorns on his head and then beat it into his head. They nailed him to a cross. And then after that was all done, these professional Roman executioners looked and said, just to be sure that he's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
We're going to stab him in the heart with a spear. And because it was described as blood and water flowed, we know it pierced not only his body, but the pericardium. It pierced his lungs and his heart as well. And so he definitely was dead. You could be in a surgery room right now. And if I beat you up like that and then stabbed you in the heart with a spear...
you're leaving the emergency room a dead person.
There's nothing a doctor could do for you, much less 2,000 years ago. So we know he died. And then the E stands for empty tomb. Women discovered the empty tomb, which was crazy back then because women weren't even allowed to be legal witnesses.
Right. So why would they even write that down?
Right. The Bible records women as discovering the tomb. And all the government officials, the Jewish government, the Roman government, they all agree that the tomb was empty. Jesus' body wasn't there.
Nobody disputes that whatsoever.
Right. And then you have Jesus appearing to over 500 people, the Bible records. Right. And why would it record that? So you can go ask them.
Right.
When it was written. And then it talks about T, the transformations, F-E-A-T, transformation of people. You get the disciples who were scared. And then they go out and they're bold because they were changed because they saw Jesus alive who had risen from the dead.
Yeah. You don't go from being afraid for your life because of what you believed in, to being an outspoken proponent and even dying for it.
Exactly. And there's other changes that went on, too. I encourage you to go to our website, truthrevolution.tv, and look up F-E-A-T, the FEAT acronym.
There you go.
We do a whole show about it on a different date. So this is how we show Jesus really derives from the dead. It's logical. It's historical. All right. get out to Revolution Church this morning and celebrate the fact that Jesus rose from the dead.
11:15.
Get on 11:15 in the morning. So we're on South Street if you're in Salina. If you're not in Salina and you need to watch online, you can go to live.salinarevolution.com, or you can just actually go to truthrevolution.tv. That's
truthrevolution.tv.
And find the live right there. So the live feed, or you can come out to Revolution Church 11:15 in the morning. Hope to see you guys there. Have a great, happy Easter.